By the way, I read, I enjoy Hollywood Elsewhere.
Oh, good, man. Thank you.
Thank you for that. It's a great read, but always entertaining.
So you read the review?
Pardon me?
You read the review then?
I did, thank you. Yeah. Yes, I think you're about the first one I saw.
Okay. So here's the question. I mean, this is not... Sometimes when a film does not go to the... A film that's, say, coming out in March, coming out in April, something like that, the normal thing one becomes accustomed to, if it's good, I mean, particularly if it's good, to having it show up at Sundance or Berlin or both. You know, so I was kind of wondering, I was kind of a little concerned for the film when I understood that the confirmation was not to go to either. And so what's the upside in not, I mean, it's clearly good enough and it would easily make the grade, it seems to me, unless, of course, somebody said no, which would be mind-boggling. So what's the story on that?
Well, I guess it's a little mind-boggling then. But, you know, last year, while we were still editing, we were only halfway through editing, we took a trailer to the Berlin Film Festival.
Yeah.
Just, you know, on the sales side, to market it and try and sell some overseas territories.
Right.
And someone from Saban, because they were breaking into film, mm-hmm. saw the trailer and made an offer for the North American rights as well.
Right.
So the whole process kind of was short-circuited a little bit at that point.
I think it was announced in September that they had acquired rights, right?
Yes, but I think you know, they had made an offer. I don't know the terms for it, but that you know, we could still try and shop it around, and we ended up staying with Saban. But we didn't. So we didn't take it to this year's Berlin Film Festival. However, we did enter it in Sundance, and it did not make it.
Unbelievable.
I'm really glad to hear that reaction.
Wow.
I will tell you one explanation was that I don't really know much about these things, but they said that this wasn't from Sundance, but from somebody else explaining why that may have happened, is that we already had distribution for our film.
Yeah.
And it helps if you go there and you don't have a distributor yet. But I have seen films there that already have distributors. So
yeah, me too.
Might not explain all of it, but
that is mind blowing.
Better anyway.
That is mind blowing.
Well, thank you.
There's no question. I mean, I've seen movies of a mediocre cast, as I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
Up at Sundance. There's no question that your film is. Right up there. It really delivers in a. I love that it delivers within a relatively small and modest. You'd even call it a community. It's like a group of people who know each other. I guess it's a community,
right.
But it's really delightful that it feels whole and spherical. And you know, you're really getting the universe of families and relationships in this one small group. It's delightful, I think.
I guess my fear in entering, when we're thinking about entering film festivals and Sundance, was will it feel, for want of a better word, edgy enough? Does it feel too soft or family-oriented for these type of film festivals? So I just don't know. But
family means, you've got echoes of alcohol problems. I mean, family movies never touch that with a 10-foot pole, do they, as a rule?
Usually not, but you know, when you're the filmmaker, you're kind of inside this forest, and it's hard to really see it how other people are seeing it. So, I thought we'd get in, but there you are.
So even if you had the film was acquired by Saban, why wouldn't it? Why not at least submit it to just the competition, just to see how it fares in Berlin? That wouldn't work either. Nobody wanted
To take it back to Berlin this year with mm-hmm. full. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we just got on this track of we're coming out in March and the film festival talk kind of faded away. I did end up taking it to the little Sun Valley film festival last weekend.
Okay.
Which is a great place, and it was the first time I've seen it in front of a civilian audience.
Yep.
Not a bunch of Hollywood industry types. And it was 350 people at the Opera House there, and it was a great experience. I mean, the reaction was quite different than watching it in a little screening room with Hollywood folks.
Right.
So it was real nice to see.
I have a special, but my attitude in raising, I have two sons, they're 27 and 26. When they were young, my basic approach was address these guys like they're 30, and they're just their vocabulary and experience and thought processes aren't quite mature. But talk to them like they're adults. Don't talk to them like they're kids. And this the kid in your film who's the same
yes.
kid who was in St. Vincent. He's you know, besides being a really good actor, I just love that he is arguably among the most mature or the most level-headed and mature character, right up there. Not, you know, Clive Owen obviously playing his dad is a guy with issues. It's not that he's immature, but you know, this kid is the center of the film. He's steady and he gets things and he's never, you know, excitable or delusional. He's a very enjoyable character. I love that you wrote him that way.
Yeah, I mean, so many times these days when you see kids in movies, they're being outrageous or bratty or they're smart mouse. Or I kind of wanted to try doing just this nice kid who is right on the cusp of starting adulthood and trying to figure out the adult world, but to not overdo the whole modern kid film representation that we keep seeing. And it's a little scary because you wonder if that will come across as dull to audiences these days if you have a kid who's fairly subdued. But the good thing is Jaden Lieberher is such a great actor. You just watching this kid. And in real life, he is about the nicest kid I've come across.
Yeah.
I think that helps. And I hadn't seen St. Vincent all the way through when we shot. I just seen the trailer. And in the trailer, he's talking fairly normal and like a kid, and he'll even say things pretty loud.
Yeah.
And then I got him on the set, and he's such a nice, quiet kid that I actually had to bring him up to this level because his natural instinct was to be quiet, and he's a shy kid, but a great kid, and he was just right for the character.
Mm-hmm. I love that you. There's a character who's alluded to, and we never meet him except at the end, and that's the new husband of Clive Owen's ex, played by Maria Bello, and it's fully set up. I love this little twist. It's fully set up that he might be a bit of a bland, not that cool type of fellow, you know, because he has questionable taste in interior furnishings, and the whole spiritual center that is communicated to me anyway is that Clive Owen is a good fellow because he understands craft and doing things well, and that's something I think we all understand. So that tells you he's basically a very good guy, you know, despite his issues, despite struggling with being a former alcoholic. Well, he's, you know what I mean. I mean, all alcoholics never call themselves former alcoholics, but it's something you know. And I was scared at first because you let people think that maybe he's in trouble, because the first thing early on, the kid finds him in a tavern, you know, and you're all, no, here we go, you know, it's going to be one of those things. So very original.
Thanks. Yeah. And like Nebraska, a lot of this comes from my own life and and childhood, and I spent a few hours sitting outside of taverns waiting for my dad, and I would go in like that finally to try and get him and get kicked out. And my dad was pretty much a lifelong alcoholic, kind of as you saw in Nebraska, kind of a functioning alcoholic. And, but there was 1 year there when I was probably about 14 where my dad stopped drinking. And it's just amazing now to look back on it, because I always just think of him as always being an alcoholic. But he had this one miracle year where he actually stopped, and he went through withdrawal. And it's pretty much how it's depicted in this film. He was sitting at a table, and I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
I was too young to understand. And my dad was sitting at a table and talking to people who weren't there. And a lot of this film I'm pulling again from those experiences, and just to think that for 1 year he was sober, and
he's only sober for a year. He went back to drinking after a year. You're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, he kept hanging out with the same guys down at the tavern, and I think it's just after a while, it finally.
Yeah.
You know, it may have been some incident I don't know about caused it. But
anyway, I was about to say that I love that you decided to have the new husband, who's a bit of a religious fellow, turn out to be actually a pretty nice guy. And, you know, he's not a pain in the ass or you know, combative or competitive or whatever, you know, problems you might anticipate. It's very, very nice that you made that decision. Again, one of the very likable things about your film. So.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't that cliche.
Yeah.
You know, stepped out at the end, and you know, again, this is kind of based on my real life. I ended up after my parents divorced with a stepdad who.
Yeah.
Who is fairly decent, and, and I also thought it'd be this other little wrinkle that we've mainly been getting our idea about this guy from Walt, and that might be a little prejudice on his part. And I had that talk actually when I was trying to talk Matthew Modine into coming up and shooting with us.
Yeah.
I said, look, we're going to find out in the end this guy is really, he's a decent guy. He's
just
a different type of guy than Walt, but he's not a bad guy. And I think you're the guy to come up and pull this little trick off.
So but you only have him like a couple days, right? 2-3 days?
Modine? That Matthew shot with us?
Yeah.
He was only, 2 days on the set.
Yeah.
Kenny brings so much, that guy.
I got to ask you a question. I had this argument with a couple of people. I always felt during the Nebraska Oscar campaign that as strong and vivid and memorable as Bruce Dern's role is, it's unusual what that film does, because I've always maintained he's not really a lead, and even though the Cannes Film Festival gave him the Best Actor, I always felt that the guy who was carrying the burden, who had the arc, was I just blanked on
David. It. Yeah,
you know, Bruce.
Bill Forte.
His son.
Yeah,
Bruce Dern's son. Why? What's wrong with me?
David. Will Forte.
Sorry, Will Forte. Sorry. Anyway, that's what I felt,
these award shows are always odd, aren't they? The way they select. I think you could argue, but that they're co-leads, and I don't understand why that's always a big deal. That why you can't say that they're equal. But I mean, if you look at it, it's basically David's story.
Yeah.
It's too late for anything. For the father to really change, so it's really the son experiencing this, and he's got a little of his dad in him, and he's middle age, and if he comes out of this the right way, it might spur him on to change his life.
Yeah.
Whereas the dad's pretty much going to be the same. So you could make a case that this is really the son's story, and I would say. say if forced to use, you say, well, the co-leads, but I don't know. I tried not to. I was afraid that actually that someone in the process would make me rewrite it to make it clearer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the great things of Alexander Payne coming on board, because he doesn't care about that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't care who you call the lead. This is, the main thing is the story.
Right.
So he was a great defender of the script, by the way. So, that's how I see it anyway.
Well, I think that The Confirmation is very much a companion piece to Nebraska. It has the scheme and the mood of it. It doesn't have anything noisy going on, but it's quietly compelling, and it grows and it builds, and
thanks.
You know, it's like that's the music that's in you, I guess. You know, that's what comes out when you write something. I guess you've got other scripts in that vein.
Yeah. Well, I just thought I'd done a lot of studio assignments that never got made, and then I took some time off and wanted to write some originals. And even though there were similarities to Nebraska in this, the ideas just kept coming. So I thought, well, I'm gonna do this. And I'd just seen Winter's Bone around that time, and I was trying to think of a real simple story to tell that I could direct.
Mm-hmm.
And Winter's Bone had a big effect on me at that time, because it's kind of the same thing in a way, this search in this small community for something, and very simply told. And then, I grew up, one of my favorite films of all time is The Bicycle Thief.
So, yeah, that's there for
all
sure.
Of these things coming together. And then again, my dad, like in Nebraska, he had his air compressor stolen, but most of the time he'd have his tools stolen.
Right.
So all of these things kind of came together, and I kept writing these things down, and I thought, well, if I had been a young filmmaker in my 20s and had these ideas, I may have tried to make a trilogy starting with this one and ending with Nebraska, and then in between you have the 18-year-old boy who rebels and hates his dad, I came upon it way too late. But, I'm turning 60 this year, so I'm just doing what I can now.
Right. So the one could say, there's a HBO film coming up about the Clarence Thomas hearings.
And I'm really looking forward to that, too.
And it's got almost the same title as your film.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh.
And one could argue, say, well, that doesn't exactly, the words, The Confirmation, doesn't exactly seem to echo what I saw. It's like, it's okay. I mean, I get the whole religious echo thing. But maybe you could explain why you chose that title and what you would say.
I read your review, and I thought you had a good point about that. And I, first of all, I went through thousands of titles for this and never came upon one. But I liked the title, The Confirmation. It kind of reminded me of the title, The Conversation. I thought, well, if The Conversation was a good title for a movie, The Confirmation should be all right. I didn't, even though it has the religious overtones in the title based on, what they talked about. To me, it's kind of a MacGuffin title. My way of explaining it, and it may only be me that gets it, is that there's a certain point in all of our lives as we're growing up where it starts to dawn on you that adults don't really know what they're doing, that the world is kind of fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And you live for a certain while. For most of us who are lucky, at least middle class or above, you're kind of insulated from the world in a way. And then you gradually start to see these things. And then there comes this day in your life where all of a sudden it's confirmed to you what the world really is like and what you're going to have to deal with as you grow into an adult.
Right.
And I'm not saying that in a cynical way. I'm just saying where when Santa Claus is all of a sudden, you realize that's not a reality, but you also realize that the adult world is something different than you expected, and your parents don't have it all together. So that's a roundabout way of saying to me, this weekend confirms to Anthony what he kind of been seeing. And he's
that's interesting.
And all of a sudden, it confirm to him
right.
what the world really is.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and like I say, I don't know that anyone would ever get that from this, but it's kind of like, and it also is kind of like Nebraska. We talked about the title to Nebraska, and we never came up with a better one.
Mm.
And we said, we'll change this at some point, and we never did.
Right.
And Nebraska is not really the perfect title for that movie either. And in a way, I love the title Nebraska, but in a way, some people took it as we were making fun of the state and the people there. So I thought that was unfortunate with that title, but I still love the title. But anyway, the confirmation to me was that period in your life when it's confirmed to you what this is all, really all about, what your struggles will be, and if you're lucky, you'll deal with them and still find a way to make a happy life for yourself. But that was it for me. But like you say, it probably is not going to. I think most people will probably take away the religious connotation.
Okay, if you and Alexander were not making fun of those folks that they came to visit with those zombie expressions as they sit in front of the television.
Yeah.
I think a measure of value of a human being is how zombie-ish they are in their approach to media. I include myself. I'm a total zombie. We're all zombies with our phones these days. So I have no excuse on that level, but to sit there and just kind of like, how are you doing there? Yeah, got to watch the TV, you know. Anyway.
Well, the thing, Alexander and I both come, we both started out as satirists.
Right.
His earlier films had more satire, but even Nebraska, it doesn't look to be as much of a satire as Election, but he still has that ingredient in it. And I came from a comedy background in Seattle, where most of the stuff was satire. So we both have a little bit. So no matter what films we do at this point, there's always going to be that in there. That whoever you're depicting, whether it's some rich guy in Hawaii or a novelist in California,
right.
They're going to be in for a little bit of humor and be made fun of a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure how much of that is in. I hadn't really thought about in the confirmation. There's a little bit of it about the community overall, and that's kind of the town I grew up in, with mechanics and the carpenters.
What was the name of the town?
I grew up in Kent, Washington, which is a suburb of Seattle.
Okay.
So it's part of the suburban sprawl now, but right. When I was younger, it was a little bit more rural.
And the film was shot in the suburbs of Vancouver, correct?
Yes, east of Vancouver.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't really get a sense of Vancouver being that close.
Vancouver is it's gentrifying to the east, so you have to go further out now than Surrey.
Okay.
We went out to Maple Ridge and Aldergrove, so it's about an hour out now to find these places.
Speaking of the bicycle thief, which was the parallel is pretty obvious. Where do you stand on the on Criterion deciding to go with the original title? I've always thought that the bicycle thief singular, because you know it makes you decide what it's alluding to, or maybe that thievery out of desperation and poverty is something that is not singular, but maybe
maybe it's because I grew up with that title, but I like that explanation of yours that.
Yeah.
Saying bicycle thieves kind of gives the ending away in a way. But it does bring up a question, because there are some scholars who, if you say the bicycle thief to them, they will correct you as if you don't know what you're talking about. Say it's actually called bicycle thieves.
Yeah.
So,
that's true. But it's the, whoever decided to call it the singular way back in... You know, how long ago was that? Like 50 years ago. They made a good call. They really did. And thank goodness there are some of us that were, go to our graves saying bicycle thief singular,
So there's that film kills me for some reason. I just, there are are too many modern films that get me in that way. Did you like the film Rosetta? Like
a film
called the Dardenne brothers, Rosetta.
Why am I not remembering that? How long ago was that?
Oh, that was the end of the 90s. That's the one where it's the girl trying to make a living selling at this stand, and this kid helps her out, and she ends up kind of stabbing him in the back. But it's just this tale of desperation.
Right.
I felt that in the... I don't see that as often anymore, but The Bicycle Thief just kind of still shakes me when I watch this.
It's funny how... if you've been in a state of relative poverty, week to week, paycheck to paycheck, you really need to get that job, as Clive Owen's character does, and it's a very big deal if he can't find his toolbox, which is what is the driving plot mechanism of your film. It took me back to my hand-to-mouth journalism days.
Oh, yeah.
And, I'll tell you, when you get to the point where it's not so anxious, and you're a little more secure about things, and there's a pretty good you sure don't want to go back to that frame of mind.
You'll do well. You see it in this town, a lot of people will do anything avoid going back to that. I mean, that's how I grew up, and we lived paycheck to paycheck, and some people grow up that way, and as soon as they're out of it, they want to forget it and don't have any more empathy for it. But I just still...
I'm not going to say this. I'm not going to reveal this, but there's a plot element that happens in Act 3 where what actually happened and who actually is responsible for stealing the box. I thought that was a very moving and very sad thing, and very, very touching, though.
Thanks.
That was a very good way of that was just good. I really admire that you took it in that direction.
Well, I'll tell you another little. I don't know if it's a secret or whatever, but it was a writing exercise that helped me come up with that. And that this started with could a young boy, who's the nicest young boy who never, he doesn't even have a sin to tell the priest, can he break all 10 commandments in a weekend and do it all for good reasons? So, so I did that, and some of them I had to come up with things to represent.
Right.
So when he steps on the bug that's killing, when he's looking at his friend's girl with that kind of lust in his eye, that's coveting your neighbor's wife. Mm-hmm. So a few of them, I had to do that to get it. Mm-hmm. But the toughest one I was having was false witness against your neighbor. So when I got to that point in the script, I'm thinking, well, actually, if it was the other guy who stole it, and he comes in, and as a, the kid being clever would get the Tim Blake Nelson character to admit that the guy stole it by saying what he did there, that would be the bearing false witness. And so that actually helped me come up with a little bit of a twist there, which I like you say, I think is fortunate, but it's also fortunate for me because that may be my favorite scene with Clive. He's so good in there without saying a word there towards the end, just his face. And, and the other thing that was amazing to me about that, that was our second day of shooting. We were out in Aldergrove for just 2 days, and so we had to shoot that scene. And I even asked Clive, I said, I'm trying to make it so we don't have any big emotional scenes right off the bat, but the way to schedule it, we got this the second day, and he said, do not worry. Don't worry about it. Basically telling me he's a professional actor. He will get this. And he did.
It's really I'm looking for. I'm going to come to the. They're having a screening tonight at the at a house that I've never actually been to, but it's on Sunset, and you're all going to be there afterwards, correct?
Tonight we're I'm going to the Real Talk with Stephen Farber.
Real Talk with Stephen Farber, right? Okay.
Yeah, that's the one they have me going to. You're going to a different screening with media, or?
Well, here, let me see this.
They don't have me going anywhere else tonight, so I guess I won't be there.
Wait a minute. My mistake. It's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
It's at
the Newhouse?
Newhouse, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Is that
it's kind of our official, you know, it's such a small budget film, but yeah, they are giving us this nice little premiere. Mm-hmm. I don't think the red carpet's going to be real long, maybe 10 feet. So it's going to be one of those types. But yeah, we're going to have a nice little viewing there and a good group of people coming and some of the actors. So you're coming to that?
Yes, definitely. I'll say hello when I'm there.
Yeah, please come by and say hello.
How about Patton Oswalt? Is he going to be there?
I haven't seen Patton on the list.
Okay.
Maybe I'll email him today because I've been in touch with him since.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Matthew Modine and Maria Bello, Clive and Jaden are on there. So okay. I think Stephen Tobolowsky isn't around here, but I asked them to specifically try and get him because he was so great.
Yeah.
But,
you know,
he went and interviewed two priests for that small role.
Okay.
That's how dedicated he is. So,
I have a friend. I have a friend who he's not Catholic, but somehow he got himself into a confessional once, and he felt compelled to unload everything that he felt was not quite right about his life or some failings, and he went on to some extent. He was kind of surprising himself, but he said he mentioned this, he mentioned that, he mentioned this. And he kept going, and he eventually heard the priest on the other side of the confessional box go. I thought that was really funny, but anyway. Well, it was delightful.
I remember those days in the confessionals. Yeah. It scared the hell out of me.
Yeah. Delightful talking to you. I'll look forward to saying hello tomorrow. And I'm looking forward to seeing it with a good crowd. I mean, that's what I love about some good Hollywood premieres. You're going to have people that are going to be responsive, and they'll get what's going on, and they'll get the scheme of it. There's nothing more grim than to see a film with people that love movies and are sensitive to the currents in a film, and then you go see it at Megaplex, and people just kind of go, you know? I got to tell you guys, it's, you know, you have your views, but it's, the movie is not the problem. You are. but you can't, but that doesn't sound right when you say that.
I'm hoping that we get a good response. Like I said, before this, we didn't even really show it to a test audience in the suburbs.
Right.
It's only been to industry friends who are studying the movie rather than enjoying it, and it's always a little harrowing. The first time I saw Nebraska was in Alexander Payne's editing bay with 12 people, and there was nobody was reacting. And when we were done, Alexander was a little worried and said, you guys weren't laughing much. And oh, no, it was funny. I'm hoping we have a good crowd. I'll be able to tell you how tonight's crowd reacted. So.
My reaction to Nebraska was not that it was ha-ha funny. It was grim funny. It was sardonic funny. It was like, you know, LQTM, laughing quietly to myself funny.
Yeah. Well, up to that point, I'd only been writing straight comedy.
Mm-hmm.
So when I wrote Nebraska, it was this great relief not to actually call it a comedy.
Right.
I thought of it as a drama with some humor spread here and there.
Yeah.
But and same with Confirmation. It's nice not to always have to come up with a joke every page or two. It's been a great experience.
Isn't, you know, all interesting genres are always more interesting. Even thrillers, even gangster films, if you throw in the occasional laugh, the occasional humor a bit, you know, it's always better when you do that, I think.
Yeah, well, the movies I grew up with in the 70s, a lot of them were called dramas, but there was humor in them as well.
Yeah. And all comedies are much better if you write them as serious. It was the same rules of drama. I mean, they can be comedies, but you have to write them as if they're. Do you agree with that, more or less?
That's how I approach it. I'm writing a drama,
right?
And then I look for try and find the right places for the humor, and that's really tricky, but it's a fun challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And those are my favorite movies. You know, I grew up with Hal Ashby and Billy Wilder movies, and those two were just masters at finding the right tone between the two. And then Alexander Payne came along, and P.T. Anderson, those guys doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So all of that was a real inspiration. And that's how I see a real life. It's just this tragedy overlaid with absurdity and humor.
Well, anyway, delightful talking. Looking forward to seeing it tomorrow, and we'll say hello sometime after the film. Thank you, Bob.
Well, thanks, Jeffrey, and thanks for the mention in Hollywood Elsewhere. I read it religiously, and always enjoy it. So
that's very comforting. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Okay. Right. Thanks. Hope to see you tomorrow.
Take care. Bye.